N4, RSN, mobile.
RSN, good evening, N4ZLK. My name is Shane. I know I've talked to you before, I just can't remember your name, over.
Here's Andrew, and I'm picking you up okay-ish right now. I'm 85 northbound. I'm not sure what the coverage is. I'm usually down in Anderson, so I'm not sure what the coverage is like up heading up 85. Right now, I just passed Lawrence Road.
You're coming in fine. Maybe it's my signal. I hope it's not. I just put up a new antenna last weekend. I'm hoping it's working well.
I doubt it's you getting into the repeater. For whatever reason, there seems to have been some sort of degradation to the receive side of my end of this repeater. I'm not sure what it is.
Right there at Augusta Road and 85, when you're going under the bridge, Augusta and Malden Road, it's kind of goes in a shadow of the repeater, so there's not a good signal there, but I'm not sure about there at Lawrence Road.
Be hitting the 385 interchange here in just a second, but I mean, it's good enough right now where I can make out everything okay.
Working tonight?
No, I'm actually heading to Charlotte to start a new job tomorrow.
Congratulations, but all the way in Charlotte, huh?
Duke Energy. I'll be working out of Simpsonville, but they do their 2 weeks of orientation and training in Charlotte, so I'll be there till Thursday, come home for the weekend, and then go back next Sunday for another week or Thursday, and then I'll be working out of Simpsonville.
Good. I remember the last time we talked, you were saying you were looking for something else. So congratulations. Now, are you going to be a lineman or doing something else for them?
The first 5 seconds of that, and then it completely went out on me. Try it again. I was going under the all these bridges on 35. It may have been that.
So I said, congratulations, the last time I talked to you, you were looking for a job still. Are you going to be a lineman for them, or are you doing something else?
Line work.
Out there, whenever there's storms and things like that, you'll be out there all night long. But I guess you're kind of used to being out overnight, aren't you?
That'll just be right at home for me, and at least now I'll be out there making the big bucks, so I'm good with it.
I'm sure the pay is a little, if not a lot, better than what you were doing. But both are service jobs, and we appreciate it.
And I think it's—I'm not sure if it's my end or what—but you are dropping out pretty bad. So I'm going to say 73s to you, and might try and hit the 6 mile while I'm still around this area and see if Jack's on. But good talking to you, Shane, and I'll try and catch you when I'm coming back through. KO4 RSN, I'll be clear on your final.
Be careful and drive safe, and congratulations again. We'll talk to you again. KO4 RSN, N4ZLK.
ZLK, KC4EZU.
BZN, N4ZLK. Good evening, Harry.
Good evening, Shane. Wanted to, I don't know what the right word here is, update you, since you were there listening, on where the name of the shut-in trail came from.
Interested in that. I think you were on the net the other night doing that, and I caught maybe the last little bit of it. So, yeah, I didn't get all of that. Yeah, go ahead. I appreciate that.
N4ZLK, KC4EZN. There is a ridge called Shut-In Ridge that blocks all... There is a valley, Mint Creek Valley, I think is what they call it, but that ridge blocks that valley off from the French Broad River Valley. And it got that name somewhere in the early 1700s, and when Vanderbilt bought as much of this part of the world as he could see, and that's the story I also heard, was he took a real estate agent up on top of one of the mountains around here and says, buy everything you can see. And that's literally what happened. But anyway, he named that trail after that shut-in ridge because that's part of what he had to go up to get up to Mount Pisgah. When you come from the Biltmore Estate, going north and then west, that was the road, if you want to call it that, that he used to take his guests and supplies and stuff up to a hunting lodge that was right below Mount Pisgah that he called Rattlesnake Lodge. But anyway, that was where it got its name, was from that ridge. I had been told one time that it was called that because it was so covered over with foliage, which I guess that makes a nice story too, but a little less true than what the original story was. But anyway, I just I wanted to bring you up to date on that, and if I put out something that's not quite right, when I find out it is right, I like to at least correct it to the best of my knowledge, and I actually learned something there too, because I believe the first story I told. Anyway, we'll turn it back to you, and we'll be around for the net. Your signal sounds like you're sitting here in the chair next to me. It kind of scared me there for a minute because I turned around and I looked, and I said, no, he's not here. Coming in loud and clear. N4ZLK, KC4EZN.
The signal report. I put this antenna up on the ridge at the end of my house. It's a J-pole that I built. And I was a little worried if we got some storms. I was thinking maybe it's not as secure as I would like it, but it's done fine so far. And I had no way of checking my signal, so I appreciate that. And yeah, that's an interesting story. Vanderbilt owned a lot of property up there, didn't he? And he probably paid, pennies or half pennies per acre when he bought it at the time. I don't know what it was, but I bet it wasn't much more than that. Over.
Probably not. The Pisgah National Forest was that land. At least ways that's the story I heard, was where most of the land came from, was I think when he decided to get out of the real estate business, that was where that land came from. And what's kind of interesting is when you look at the topo maps, and the reason I know this is I've worked with Boy Scouts for a long time and have camped and hiked and stuff around in the Pisgah Forest, you know, in the Brevard area down in there. And looking at one of those topo maps one day, I saw this little square that was a different color on the map and got curious about what was going on. And I found out that not everybody wanted to sell. And there were a few holdouts, and these were, I think, 140-acre land grants that, I don't know if it was the British or the U.S. government or the state of North Carolina, but anyway, however all that happened, people came out and homesteaded some of this land, and there were a few of them who refused to sell, and rather than going to court, which I'm not sure how courts worked in those days. I got a funny feeling that the courts then might have been a little bit faster than today, but still, I think Vanderbilt and his lawyers figured out that it was cheaper just to ignore those people. You can't deny them right away or access to their property, but it was more hassle than it was worth to go fight them in court and try and buy them out. So there were a few scattered squares, which I don't know where that property stands today, but it did show up on some topos that I looked at like 25 years ago. We'll turn it back to you, Shane. Enjoyed the conversation. N4ZLK, KC4EZN.
N4ZLK. Yeah, that is interesting. I guess that'd be kind of nice to live out, have your own property out in the middle of all that other property that no one probably really did much with. Because I'm sure he logged some of it, but probably kept a lot of it natural. My youngest son got a degree in outdoor leadership, they call it now. It's they do all kinds of camping and hiking and wilderness preparation and stuff. And he was telling me that they say originally when the first settlers were coming over from Europe over here, that the canopies of the trees were so tall and so tight that a lot of sun didn't make it down to the ground, just like you were talking about that trail, you know, shut-in trail. And he said, you know, pretty much all this whole area has been logged. The East Coast was logged during that time. They're sending all that wood and lumber back to Europe. But I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he was learning, was that, you know, that the growth was so tall that some, there were areas in these forests around here that the sun never touched the ground over.
Probably correct from some of the stuff that I have read. Where I live, I can see Mount Pisgah from my front porch, and have driven up, is it North Carolina Highway 151. It starts out down in the valley. I live in the area that we call Candler, and I think it was named after a family by that name that moved out here. And it's not a, I guess you would call it a community. It's not an incorporated town, but we do have our own zip code that we share with another community that did not want to be called Candler. But anyway, it's about 15 or so miles from my house to the Blue Ridge Parkway. And when I look up there and I see all those trees, it is very, very difficult to imagine that back in the late 20s and early 30s, those hills were basically clear cut from what I have been told. Now, when you get on out further west, the Joyce Kilmer area where they have all of those original poplars and stuff, I think the lumber there was just too difficult to get out, was why they left it. But I have been told that all these mountains around here now that we see covered up with trees were clear cut. This is going back almost 100 years ago. So I think what your son's learning is probably pretty correct. KC4EZN.
Not necessarily doubting him, you know, I can't verify that, but it sounds right. I mean, you think of all the years that this land wasn't really touched by anybody that used the lumber. That was a long time of things being able to grow. And I was just looking on the QRZ page here, and you're almost directly north of me. I can see Caesar's Head. I live down below Caesar's Head to the southwest of Caesar's Head, about 5 miles. So I've got a clear shot there. But I got a big ridge, that 3,000-foot ridge behind me. I can't get over on the... If it wasn't for this repeater, I wouldn't be able to get over to you.
It was interesting. Dave, W4DJW, sent me the profile of what the terrain looks like between my house and Caesar's Head repeater. And that 3,000 feet that you're looking at... I am on the other side of that ridge. I'm not, but about maybe, I don't know, 2,500 feet down. I think elevation here, according to my GPS, is in the 2,200-foot level. And where I would look at you from here is probably in the, I don't know, I'm going to say 5,000 feet plus or minus a couple of hundred. But what's really interesting is I get into your repeater down there I can do it with 5 watts. The antenna that I'm using right now is a Yagi, and it is pointed about 100 degrees away from you, and so I put my power up to 10 watts, and that's what I'm running now. But there is something about propagation that I don't understand, and I've talked to two or three people, and one of them came up with the idea of this knife edge effect when a light wave hits a sharp edge, it refracts, and I think a radio wave does the same thing, and I'm a little hard pressed to believe that. But when I looked at what Dave sent me, and I've looked at the topo, and we Between me and that repeater is nothing but a big mountain ridge. And I say, when I look out my front porch, that's what I am looking at. And I'm having to look through probably 1,000 or so feet of that mountain between me and Caesar's Head. So there is something going on there that I don't understand, but and I know driving around town, there are hot and cold spots into the Caesar's Head repeater, and I think I just happen to be living in one of those hot spots. That's my unscientific observation of why I can get into your repeater with 5 watts when our local club repeater, which is on the other side of a mountain from where I live down in a sort of a hole, and I have to look through a ridge to get to it, and that's why I put the Yagi up when I had just a J-pole up like you've got. I could get into your repeater with 5 watts, and I had to run anywhere from 10 to 20 to get the 6 miles to our club repeater from my house. So there's things going on that I don't understand, but I think it's radio waves don't go through rocks, or they...
Repeater time out, exit. Repeater time out, clear.
The repeater out, that's right, it hadn't... Well, it should have gone into net mode. Anyway, we'll turn it back to you, KC4EZN.
Okay, yeah, I got most of that. It timed out right there, right at the end of what you were saying. Yeah, I never realized you were that far up until I just looked at the map. I just assumed you were up somewhere around Hendersonville or Asheville. That is a good trip through there. We go up that way a lot, along 40, and I never knew I could hit the repeater from that little area. I have to try it next time we go. But Harry, I'm going to let you go. It's good to hear you. I'm glad I got to talk to you again. I've heard you on here a long time, and just until the other day, it was the first time I think I really ever spoke with you. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate it. You have a good evening, and we'll hear you on the net. KC4EZN and 4ZLK.
Okay, KC4EZN. Next time you come up 40, if you're going west, after you pass exit 44, which we call Malfunction Junction, and you go by the truck way station on your right, if you look up behind that truck way station and hiked up there about a mile, you'd walk across my backyard. That'll give you a little bit of perspective of where I'm at. N4ZLK, KC4EZN, and we'll be clear for the net.
Next time I see the truck station on the map, or the way station there, so... All right, Harry, have a good evening. N4ZLK.